And tonight, our main speaker is Ken.
How you doing, everybody? My name's Ken Casey. I'm an alcoholic. I'm down from Boston. I'm a grateful member of the East Milton Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety date's March 31st, 1991. Man, this is crazy. My group at home is, 60-something years old and a big meeting. But I've never seen anything like this, and I've been to meetings all over the world, so... Keep up the good work. What I tell you right off the bat, I have a tremendous fear of public speaking, which shows that Alcoholics Anonymous can help us walk through, any fear in life. I'll tell you a quick story before I get going. I'm a musician, so I'm down here, and I don't usually travel with a suit, right? So I threw together a situation, and I was standing out down in Union Square, and I realized I didn't have a belt. So I said to one of the guys that works for me, I said, I need your belt. And he reluctantly gave me his belt. And then as I was coming up here in the cab, I kept getting texts from each guy down the ladder saying, thanks, so-and-so just took my belt. So it trickled down like 13 guys. The last guy doesn't have a belt. Anyway, and now you can't even see anyway, so I could have just come. So, I'm so grateful to be in AA. I'm so grateful to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm so proud to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor. I have a home group. I've been in that home group for coming up on 24 years. Guy I sat beside at a table in my group, the head alky, just passed away with 47 years, and the consistency of looking over and seeing a guy in the same chair or a woman in the same chair every night, like watching people in AA just continuously day in and day out walk the walk is the most powerful thing, ever. I'll also tell you, I don't know, I've been to meetings everywhere, and I used to think Boston was the only way to do AA, and then I started to travel the world, and I realized it's pretty cool everywhere. I've been to a meeting in Bend, Oregon. I have some sober friends there, and I have sober friends all over the world. And you have to know that from where I came from, where I grew up, I hung around with the same 30 guys, and I didn't want to meet 31. My mother used to say, "You will live the most sheltered life," and that's just exactly how I wanted it, And I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, and man, I've met people all over the world. Who would have thought? But my drinking... what I was going to say about my group is we go on commitment. So, like, my group, East Milton meets on Wednesday nights at St. Agatha's Church, and, a Tuesday night meeting from someplace else might come in and speak, and we go there. And we have a large group, so there's a lot of times, 20, 30 people on a commitment, and the meetings are an hour and a half. So I'm always one of the guys saying, be respectful to everybody else. Let everyone else get in. So I'll sometimes go years, and I've spoken at a podium thousands of times, and sometimes I'll go years without ever having to speak for more than 5 minutes, But it's a nice opportunity to also tell my story, and to remember some parts of my story that I don't get to talk about a lot. I picked up a drink when I was 11 years old. My father had just committed suicide in the house. I don't blame that, but, it was just me and my mother, and she was obviously dealing with all that, and, eyes were off me. I gravitated towards the kids in the neighborhood and the older kids, and next thing I know, I had a drink, and next thing I know, all my problems went away, and I never wanted anything else but to feel that feeling again. School, sports, my college scholarship, right? Does everyone in AA say that down here too, that they lost their college scholarship because of drinking? No. All right. Well, I don't know if I would have been a good athlete anyway, because I was incapable of showing up. My baseball team would be playing, 12, 13 years old, and the center fielder would be right next to the basketball courts, and I'd be passed out on the basketball courts from the night before, and my team would be playing right there, you know, and that's not how you're supposed to be when you're 12, 13 years old. And, you know, I couldn't get out of my own way. Like, when they open, I'm amazed when I hear people in here that are alcoholics that had lives and jobs, and, like, they just opened the starting gates of life, and I just didn't go, you know, I just drank. And I put my mother through, like, living hell, you know. It was just me and her. She supported us by cutting hair out of the tiny little house that we occupied. And, you know, she would cut the hair, and she would put it all in the silverware drawer, and I would crawl in, reach a hand up, take out whatever I grabbed, and go out drinking, you know. And my poor mother, you know, cutting it. And if an only child growing up in a house where with two rooms, like, you know, the kitchen is where the haircuts were going on, and the living room was where the old ladies were waiting with curlers on. So, like, you had to get out of there, you know. You had to go drink. I had no choice. But with that, too, everyone knows your business in the neighborhood, too. And, you know, I was like the pariah, you know, in a lot of ways of, you know, everyone knew. And I remember this one woman who used to blame everything on in the neighborhood on me. Not just her, everybody did, but when I was my first time. First of all, I'd like to say the people that had the guts to get up and stand up and identify themselves, that is so awesome, and you might just save your life doing that, you know, because I wanted to, like, just blend into the wall, you know. And the good people of AA are the only ones that saved me from that, you know. But on my in Boston, when you go on these commitments, you can't speak till you have 90 days at an open speaker meeting. And if you don't want to speak from a podium, I suggest you don't go to a commitment with your sponsor on your 90th day, because the whole time over, I'm going, you're definitely not going to call me, right? There's no way I'm speaking. I'll die if you call me. And he called me, and I get up, and it was at a detox. It was at a meeting at a hospital, in the first few rows of people in the detox, and lo and behold, there was the woman that used to blame me, you know, me for everything, and she was in the detox, and my self-esteem was so low, I was, you know, like, oh my God, she's going to see me here speaking, and she's in the robe and slippers, and I'm up at 90 days speaking, you know. But I got introduced to AA for the courts for the first time when I was 17 years old. And man, I didn't know what you people were talking about. I had to come get a court slip signed, and I know it helps a lot of people. I don't agree with it, because I had a big problem with AA because of that, because everybody had pointed a finger at me, you know, the mother, the girlfriend, the police, the teachers, and I just assumed AA was the same thing, because I got sent here by the courts, you know. And but no matter what, alcohol will be the final convincer, and no matter what I thought, a few years later, I had, you know, I won't even say hit bottom, because I was in a long-running bottom, you know, but you know, there was no way out, and I found AA to be the way out of no way out. And my mother had since moved on from cutting hair in the house to opening her own little salon. And the girl who ran her, like, the front desk and ran the salon and did the books and stuff, she was only, like, 17. I was 21 at the time. She was 17, and she was 2 years sober. And my mother didn't know about anonymity or whatever, so she had told me. And I was so obsessed with this 17-year-old girl being 2 years sober, which only an alcoholic would even give that any thought, you know. But I was like, what do you mean? How could she be in AA? You know, just constantly thinking about it. And but she seemed like she, you know, she ran my mother's business. And anyway, when I hit bottom, you know, that was stuck in my head. And I had another typical night, you know, where I went out, I don't know, 6 o'clock to watch a Bruins game, and came home 3 days later. And I walked into my then girlfriend, now wife's house, and kicked open her bedroom door and said, I'm an alcoholic, you know. And we've all said that. But you know, it was that proverbial 100-pound blanket off my shoulders, you know, because I had said it 1,000 times to my friends, but I had never said it. I never meant it, you know. So, yeah, she didn't seem too startled by the news either. So, anyway, I called this girl Mara, and she said, yeah, your mother's told me about some of your drinking. It's a good idea. She said, my brother Brian is in the program too. And I couldn't believe it. Her brother Brian was an electrician, and he was doing some work on my mother's house. And I went, wow, Brian? He's like a guy I would have drank with. How could he be in AA? That's what I thought of people in AA, you know? And then that, like, happiness and relief that Brian was in AA quickly turned to terror, because Brian was doing some wiring work at my house. And when I tell you, I had every place you could hide anything that you would hide from your mother, you know, and from anyone else in the world, illegal stuff all up in the basement and stuff. And I said, oh, my God, he's going to find. And that's another, I would have thought, you know, a guy in AA would have, you know, I don't know, called the cops or something, you know. And I went home, and Brian was gone. Stuff was there. And Mara had me go to a meeting with another guy who was my age. And when I tell you, you know how they say sometime in here you'll hear your story. The kid that told me, that took me into my first meeting, told me my story before I even went into the first meeting. He was same age, kicked out of high school just like me, all the same, you know, stuff. His father had committed suicide, and he was a kid too. It was like crazy, you know, how similar it was. And I was like, wow. And he was about a year sober. And we were sitting outside of a young people's meeting. And as I started seeing people walking in, and I'm like, I know him, I know him, I know her, I know him. And I just hadn't seen these people. And I just assumed, I don't know, they were drinking in another bar, they died, I don't know, you know. And one of the kids walked in, and he had a briefcase. And I said, Peter, I knew him pretty well. And he had got sober when he was 15. He went to detox when he was 15. And that's the only time I had ever heard of the word detox. I never knew anyone else to go. And you know, he went into like a year. He had to live a place for a year. And I'd see him out in town and at the bars and stuff with a girl or whatever. And I thought he was drinking, but it turns out, you know, he had like a cranberry juice or something. And I said, Peter, you still sober from when you went to detox? He said, yeah. And he had the briefcase. I thought he was like the president, you know. And he took me into the meeting, and the meeting was a beginner's meeting at a young people's group. And the topic of the meeting was, what do you do socially in sobriety? Now cranky old me would go, what the hell does that have to do with staying sober, you know? But at the time, 21 years old, that's the first question I needed answered, because everything I did in life revolved around, I guess I stand there with a Dunkin' Donuts cup now, but, you know, standing there with a beer in my hand. And these people were talking about going on trips, just, you know, going to school, seeing the world. And I was just like, I had never heard any of this, you know. I'd never heard anyone actually do it anyway. And I was just so attracted to AA from that moment, you know, so attracted to AA, and the people were so good to me. And in 91 in Boston, there was a ton of young people getting sober. And there was this sober nightclub and all the good stuff that goes along with that. And for whatever reason, the miracle that God had for me, because instead of running with that world, although I did become friendly with some of those people, I joined the East Milton group, and it was old school AA. And I went to meetings with old timers, and I didn't necessarily live the most exciting life for a few months, but you know what? I had plenty of excitement already, you know, and I got firmly planted in the basics of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, showing up, being accountable, having a job. My first sponsor, Brian, would walk me up at the break. I don't know, you guys kind of took a break here, but you know, we have an hour and a half meeting and there's a full 15-minute break. People go out and smoke, and I hated that break. Because you can only hide for so long. You can only look busy so many weeks for 15 minutes and before they get you, you know. And And Brian would walk me up to like someone completely different from me, you know, like the oldest lady in the room, and say, "Mary, this is Kenny." And then he'd walk away, you know. And I didn't know how to talk to people, you know what I mean? Because I avoided talking with any normal people in society, because inevitably talking to someone normal in society brings up the question, you know, what do you do? And I didn't do anything, you know, so I never wanted to talk to anyone real. And this is great, by the way, the times, because in our group they just throw change at you or clap you down, so I appreciate the time. But So anyway, I just, you know what, I got in the group, I went to meetings, I got a sponsor, and then eventually guys that I grew up with started to get sober. It was awesome, you know? And we were like a few years sober, running all over the place, going on trips. None of us had ever been anywhere. We went out, you know, went on this surf trip to Costa Rica, no, to Tortola one time, and we went to a meeting, and there was a guy in the meeting. There was one guy. He's native of the island, and he just runs the meeting every week. He says, off season, sometimes no one comes. He just sits there and reads the book for an hour. But we went, and it was me and my gang of friends, and then this one other guy. It turns out he wasn't even an alcoholic. He was in a yacht race, and he needed a crew. And he went to this meeting, and he was like, "I need a crew." And we're like, he goes, "Anybody know how to sail?" And we're like, "I've never been on a boat in my life, you know?" And so he says, "Great, come to the pre-race party tonight at such and such location." We're like, "Great, we'll see you there." And we show up, tank tops, flip-flops, you know, Celtics tattoos, and there's all these Thurston Howell the Third types, you know, and we're sticking food in our pockets. And so we're talking trash. "You're going down tomorrow to the other boats." So the next day, we get on the boat, and this guy starts with the orders, you know, jive and hoe and all that stuff. And we're like, "Buddy, we don't know how to sail." We came in dead last, and the guy started drinking on the trip. I think we drove him to drink. I don't know. Another time we went to Costa Rica on a surf trip, and I say this stuff is so epic. If you know, I didn't go five blocks. You know what I mean? What going on trips and stuff. And we met some guys from New York. I lost contact with them, but we're down there and everyone's drinking by the bar at the hotel, and it's 100 degrees out, and we're drinking Costa Rican coffee, and these two guys across are, and so we start with the, you know, grace of God, you know, good waves, grace of God, you know, and just dropping the little hints. And it turns out they were sober, and we would paddle outside the break every night at sunset, and one of the guys had a little big book and, you know, a waterproof pack, and we'd have a meeting on our boards, and they ended up coming up and putting on a meeting at our group in Boston one time. And I've been all over the world. I travel for work. Like I said, I've got to go to meetings where they don't even speak English. You know, I had a bunch of friends visiting me in Denmark one time, and we went to a meeting when I was working, and they came over to visit. And we went to a meeting, and it wasn't in English. So, like, the wise asses that we are, when they laughed, we laughed, and, you know, we're just going along with it. And then they said the Lord's Prayer in Danish, and at the end of the meeting, the guy says, "Now let's say it in English for our American friends." And they knew the whole time. But you know what? I've never been kicked out of an AA meeting. And it takes a lot to get kicked out of an AA meeting. But I've been just shown love and kindness all over the world, you know. Australia, New Zealand. One time I was in New Zealand and I called Central Service from my hotel. And the guy says, "Where are you located?" And he said, Where are you? And I said, "I'm at this hotel." And he said, "Well, what side of the building are you on?" I said, "I have no idea." He said, "Look out your window. Do you see a little old guy on a cordless phone?" I looked down. There's the guy, and he was an archivist for AA. He was an American, and he lived in New Zealand. And he took me down there, and he showed me all this great stuff, and he sent me to a meeting, and the greeter, I don't know if anyone's seen that movie Once Were Warriors about the Maori Indians in New Zealand, or the natives down there. And if you're an alcoholic, it's a good watch, because, you know, it's about alcoholism and the effect on that population. But they all have the tribal face tattoos. And I'm walking into the meeting, and the greeter was a huge Maori Indian, and he's giving everyone these nose kisses on the way in. And I'm like 10 back in line, like, "Well, we don't even like hold hands at my group. Like, what the hell is this all about? It turns out he was only doing it to other Maoris, so I didn't have to rub noses with them. But I've made amazing friends in AA all over the world. I really have. And it's amazing. I mean, I'm in New York City, you know, at a meeting this size. It's so cool, you know. So grateful to be sober. So grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. The 12 steps have given me that inner peace that I was looking for in a drink in the first place. That's why I took it. I wanted inner peace, and I took it. And it worked for about 3 months, you know, and then it was all downhill. And it made things much worse. And then I got sober, and I still didn't have it. And I'll tell you what, I'm coming up on 24 years sober. If I don't do the drill, I lose the inner peace. And once you've had a taste of the inner peace, you don't want to live without it, you know. And it's so simple for me. I thought when I had all this time and sobriety, I'd want to get up and tell everything, you know. And it's just like, I could have wrapped this up in 30 seconds, you know. You know, join a group, have a sponsor, ask for help, you know. Always be involved in the 12 steps. Always have your hand out to another alcoholic, you know. Plant yourself firmly in the middle of AA. I love what the woman said earlier that spoke when, you know, it should be me, you know, that says, and why hasn't it been me that says, I'm too busy to go, you know, things are changing. And if I keep AA in the number one spot, life's a cakewalk. Everything falls into place. When I take AA out of the number one slot, all of a sudden I'm juggling, you know? And, I mean, anybody that tells you that they've been sober as long as I have and they've done it perfectly the whole time is lying, you know what I mean? Because it's just reality, you know what I mean? It's hard. I have 3 young kids. I travel. I have too many jobs, you know? But I try to keep AA number one, you know? And when I travel, it's literature. Someone said they're going to record me. Wow, that's amazing. If that is true, because those CDs and tapes, I had them when they were tapes. And with my musician friends, we'd be traveling. And when I drove and I was in charge of the stereo, I put in the tape. And a couple of those guys were in AA. They'd be like, they'd be like, whoa, man, this is brutal. And then the guy, they'd be like, hey, those stories are pretty good, you know. None of them got sober, but actually, a few did get sober. I don't think it was because of the tapes, though. I think they hit their own bottoms. But my point is, you know, AA's everywhere, you know. We just got to reach out and take it and ask for help, you know. I've seen so many people come and go over the years. From what I think about, like, when I first got here, how the faces have changed. Like, the odds are against us. But don't let that scare you, because on the flip side of that, if you do what people tell you in here to do, you're like guaranteed that it will work. And that's where I get the comfort, you know, not by the guy that falls off by the wayside. Because when they fall off by the wayside, it's usually such a clear-cut thing that happens, you know. How many times have I heard people say, I got away from meetings. I stopped asking for help. I stopped calling my sponsor. And it's like, it happens all the time, but it's so sick and so insidious that we don't see it coming, you know. But I know that the number one thing I can do for my ego in general in life is just put AA number one. If I put AA number one, everything falls into place, you know. I don't know, the gentleman dying in my group, like, really was like 47 years sober, you know, sat in the same seat all the time. And we just took a ride. We had taken a ride in town together to talk to someone about a week before he died. And I was, you know, he hasn't driven downtown. I don't even know, you know, they've done it with the big dig and all the work in Boston. The roads have changed so much. And I'm driving, he's given, you know, I know where I'm going. Plus you could maybe have GPS but Walter's going to give the directions, you know, and he probably hasn't drove in town since the 80s or whatever. And a 15-minute ride took about 45 minutes. But you know what? It's like, man, it's amazing. Like, getting in the car and going to meetings with other alcoholics and the stories and the wisdom that those guys have all passed down to me in my sobriety, I feel so fortunate. I went to a meeting in Finland, and nobody in the room had been through the 12 steps. I was like, wow. Like, how fortunate are we, you know? Like, it's still on the frontier in a lot of places in the world. And I've got to, you know, I've got to be taught what I know about AA from some AA giants, you know, and the stories they talked about, you know. I loved it when I came around, they'd say, like, their sponsors would be like, get in the back seat. You have nothing intelligent to offer to this conversation. Take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth, all that. And I love those stories. But that's not what I got. I got love and compassion. I wish I could tell you that it was the opposite, but I was still looking for a reason. I would have loved someone to have been a jerk at my first meeting. 5 minutes left? Oh, my God. You get what you get. If I don't make the 5 minutes, we'll just get out early, right? Can we do that? I forget where I was now. But anyway, these guys in AA that have it did show me love and compassion. Like I said, I wanted someone to drive me out. I was looking for an excuse for this not to work, you know? And no one's given it to me yet. One time I went to... Twice. I got a new sponsor from California, and he suggested I identify within the halls by my last name to not be anonymous to my fellow alcoholics. And my home group had a business meeting to try to kick me out of the group. But even that didn't give me that bad of resentment, you know. A few calls to central office down here, and I'm still in the group. I went to a meeting on like my 22nd anniversary in Newcastle, Australia. I've never met an Australian I don't like. I've been there a lot of times, but I've been to Newcastle twice. The first time I had a fist fight with a guy, wasn't my fault. Second, I was at an AA meeting, and a guy with like 40 years like verbally attacked me in the meeting for being American. He seemed to be like crazy, you know. But he started talking about the world debt and all this stuff, and it was on my anniversary, and that didn't drive me out of AA either. But I've been to meetings everywhere, and other than, you know, a few occasions, like, I've got nothing but love, and, you know, that's amazing when you think about all the sick people in here, you know, me included. But in closing, I'd just like to say that, you know what, AA is alive and strong, you know, day at a time. I keep meeting more and more people along my journey that I can add to my list of friends. I met a guy at a meeting in Calgary recently, and he said, can I add you to my email list? He sends a kind of a daily, you know, 24-hour message and stuff. And for someone like me who travels, to wake up and get that email every day is awesome. And I keep meeting people on the road that are musicians, and I say, hey, I'm going to give this guy your email, and all, you know, and so I keep feeding him new people, and it's just like little things like that, and every other thing that I've just, you know, I'm so blessed. We're all so blessed, and I'm grateful to be here. Thank you.